You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! It went deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 119. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll recap the week worth of games. We'll talk about Oscar Mercado being promoted. We'll talk about how much blame Terry Francona deserves for the Indian situation, if it's any. Maybe it's none, maybe it's a lot, who knows. Talk about Yeffrey Rodriguez and his emergence as a pretty solid fifth starter, and Cody Anderson's emergence is not a pretty solid fifth starter. And we interview Clippers director of social media, website, communications, public address announcer, Matt Leininger. A lot of fun talking to him about the Clippers and about Mercado especially. It's pretty... The content gods blessed us with Mercado's promotion right before the podcast started. So joining me for all that and more is none other than Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
Matt, great news.
What is it?
I've come up with a new character for the show. It's fantastic. And his name is Captain Hindsight. Everyone will love him, I'm sure of it.
What's his first observation for Captain Hindsight?
Here's a great one. Oh, the Indians should have traded for Alex Verdugo. That's a pretty good one, right? I like that one a lot. Here's another great one. The Indians should never have traded Yandy Diaz. That's a pretty good one, too, huh? I like that one a lot.
They should have maybe figured out how to unlock Giovanni Urshela, too. Or maybe Jesus Aguilar. Or
that's quite too a few far things. In the past. Giovanni Urshela? Wait a minute. What?
Are you? He's like a folk hero in New York right now.
Is he? Oh, that's right.
He's doing great over there. And he's smoking everything. It's not like luck completely. His BABIP's high, but he's hitting the ball really hard.
Well, anyway, they really should have traded for Alex Verdugo, especially now.
Remember those rumors for Kluber for Verdugo? I don't know. We've talked about that rumors can be anything, so I don't know how much real with that. But if that was real and it fell through, I'm real sad right about now.
What a barf factory, honestly. That's a mess right there. Oh, God. Anyway, it's something I'll be working on throughout the year. Those are two such takes that our friend Captain Hindsight will reveal.
Does he need a voice or an intro or anything? He just kind of pops in and he sounds exactly like Merritt Rolfing.
We'll work on it. Maybe this. Oh, I'm Captain Hindsight. Oh, that's pretty good. I'll work on the voice. He should probably be irritated. Like, I'm Captain Hindsight. Why'd they trade away Yandy Diaz? Look at those biceps. And so like on, like that.
Is Grover from Sesame Street?
Yeah, sort of like Grover from Sesame Street, you know?
So, the main thing to talk about tonight, besides Captain Hindsight, is Oscar Mercado's here. Usually, this kind of stuff happens right after a podcast, but literally like an hour before we started, it was posted that Oscar Mercado is going to be joining the Indians. He's joining the team in Chicago, I'd assume, tonight, and he's going to start Andre Knott's on the broadcast probably tomorrow. Then as a result, Tyler Naquin's heading to the injured list. He was running before the game, and then his hamstring felt tight, so he's out probably for at least a few days. So the Oscar Mercado show is here. Merritt, how hyped, if at all, are you to see Oscar Mercado with his speed and apparent new swing and all this fun stuff come to the Cleveland Indians? And how much do you think he's going to help the Indians outfield?
First of all, if he's really good and helps carry the team, then his nickname should be Oxcart. I like that a lot.
Oxcart Mercado.
And I will not drop that. It's very good. And it sounds
I kind of love it.
And you know, the fun thing about Oscar Mercado is if he is even all right offensively, he's the best offensive outfielder the Indians have. And that's sad good. Yeah, that's great, man. Naquin, whatever. You know, you wash your hands of him. And then, I mean, honestly, this is depressing now. Right now, I'm just looking at stats for the outfield play, the various outfielders.
Oh, you never do that. Don't do that.
I know. Just don't look at the numbers, dude. What are you doing to yourself? Oh, God. Jason Kipnis, get out of here. Captain Hindsight has some thoughts on Jason Kipnis later.
Captain Current Sight has some thoughts on
also Jason that. Kipnis. Also that guy. he's different and more boring and also has very obvious views on things.
Yeah.
I am impressed with what Jordan Luplow has been doing, albeit in, you know, a short stint here, though he seems to be making space for himself. But yeah, no, there's definitely room here for Oscar Mercado to do something magical. I'm all for it. I will be the first to admit I don't pay a ton of attention to prospects. I simply don't have the brain space for it. There's too much Major League Baseball for me to pay attention to. I see guys in the pipeline and go, I hope he's good later. But, you know, outside of like Francisco Lindor and players of that caliber, I just don't. You can't get too hyped up, and this will be a bit of a buzzkill. You know, our old friend Snidely Buzzkill, another character I could work on. Anyway, but
yeah, I never get hyped up about prospects. So I don't know what you're talking about. I never get overexcited about
them. Yeah, right? I know.
I'm really calm when they're promoted.
No, it's again, it's super exciting, and honestly, hopefully the shot in the arm the Indians need. It's been almost 3 years now, I think. 4 years since the Indians got a real nice shot in the arm for promoting a rookie. Yeah.
Unless you count pitchers, but offensive shot in the arm.
Offensive shot in the arm. It's been how many years?
Lindor, 2015.
That was we're coming up on 4 years in 1 month, actually. Almost precisely. By the time you hear this podcast, it'll be 1 month before the fourth anniversary of his debut that they got an offensive shot in the arm from a rookie call-up.
I think the next closest was Bradley Zimmer, but he was a dud. I mean, he's still going to be good, but he hasn't been a shot in the arm.
Yeah, like you just think about guys that they've called. Like, I suppose you could call Tyler Naquin a shot in the arm, but that was such a a flash of light that suddenly was snuffed out, sort of a thing. Once people figure out what he couldn't hit, so would it be cool if they could do that? You know, I mean, I don't mean to belabor the point, but I was looking at Alex Verdugo's numbers today, and again, rookie. So just something like that would be cool. Obviously, you look at guys who get called many times, they don't do well. Case in point, Mike Trout's rookie year was terrible. It wasn't long or anything like that, but he hit very terribly, I believe was the numbers. He was 130. It was only 40 games, but he had a 672 on base or OPS, and then he popped that up 300 points the next year. So sometimes it takes a little while, but the Indians definitely need something, and whatever that is, it could be this.
And everybody keeps saying, like, Oscar Mercado's not going to save this team. But like you said, he doesn't have to be a savior to be a pretty big upgrade in the outfield, because he's probably better defensively than Martin in center field. He's faster than anybody. And if he hits, like, even slightly above average, he's the best outfielder by quite a bit.
Yeah, and I think, when we say slightly above average, he's hitting, 280, 350, 450 or something right now down in Columbus? I mean...
Oh, he's been fantastic in Columbus.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, hell, if he starts posting a line similar to, with less walks than, what Santana is doing right now, which is 279, 380, 434. If it's 280, 350, 430, hell yeah, baby, sign me up for that. Give me that. He's 24-year-old. Give me that right now, and we can grow from there.
Plus the possibility for, a ton of stolen bases. Yeah.
Right, exactly. He'll be on base, he'll be playing defense, and, it's definitely something to be excited about, if only because of what it could mean for stabilizing the offense or even creating any offense at all. How many times have we watched the offense just kind of not exist? I believe we can even refer to a couple of games out in Oakland this past weekend. Yeah. So
it's going to be fun to actually maybe see the Indians be on this side of grabbing a prospect and then unlocking something in him. He was with the Cardinals. He was never that great. Well, I guess he was above average hitter in the Cardinal system. He had a 346 WOBA in 2017, which isn't too bad. But then he came over to the Indians, and this year he apparently worked on something with his swing. And then he's been a lot more patient since he came to the Indians. He has a double digit walk rate since he's been over. So, I mean, there's a lot of good things that if you translate to the majors, this is finally a guy that's the reverse of Urshela or Aguilar or whatever, where the Indians get this player who the other team basically just I don't know if they gave up on him, but they traded him for two really lower level, neither of them pitched higher than high A outfielders, and now the Indians got him. And then if this is finally their chance to grow somebody out of nothing, which is going to be really exciting to see, even more than just having a competent outfielder for once.
And how many times have we talked on this podcast, or just to ourselves or to friends or whatever, just the Indians have rolled the dice on outfielders that we've barely heard of, or, that we were relatively excited for, about a million times the last 5 years. I mean,
and it's worked a couple. Like, it hasn't been failed every time, but
it hasn't failed by any stretch. No, but it also hasn't. I mean, outside of Michael Brantley, how many guys that they've gotten, in a trade that you go, ooh, he could be something special, maybe not, ends up being nothing. I mean, I just feel like that's happened so many times. It's absurd, and maybe this will be the time it won't. Maybe, maybe it won't. I don't know. We'll see. It's still super early. It's still nothing.
I was never a big believer in Greg Allen to begin with. I think he's a great kid, and I think he has some skills, but is he done? Is there much more room for him if Oscar Mercado turns out to be pretty much anything?
I mean, honestly, if he is done, that's really depressing, because I just don't think he's ever really been given a chance. And that, more than anything, I think is the most damning statement about the Indians the last while. I think, they're just not, they don't seem to give young players a shot. And I mean, this is obviously a larger chunk of something we're probably going to talk about in a few minutes. But if not, like, I mean, it's just there's been like you look at, you know, Greg Allen's game logs from this year, and there's no consistency, really. I mean, I know he was starting a decent amount. It's just, I don't know, I just feel like he's not getting consistently, you know, lots of consistent at bats all the time. He was in and out of the lineup, pinch running, this, that, the other thing. You know, he had a stretch from the 7th to the 16th where he had a grand total of 8 at bats while appearing in, you know, 7 games and stuff like that. Like, it's just that baseball is so about routine and getting a chance to, you know, aggregate. And I just don't think he's ever been really been given a chance to do that while we watch other guys, you know, like Carlos Gonzalez get penciled in every single day at this point since he's been on the team. And yeah, he's hitting better than Greg Allen, but Greg Allen also, I don't know, just was never really given any chance. Even look back to last year when he was quote unquote playing a lot. He was never playing like chunks of time or just every day in it. You know what I mean? So I don't know. And this is something we've talked about many times. I mean, you look to someone like Yandy Diaz down in Tampa now, who is beating the ever-loving crap out of the ball. And this website that I write for, that we podcast for, was relatively enamored of him, I believe, would be slightly, a good way to describe it. And then it just, you know, and then you look over to somewhere like, I'll just pick a random town in a Great Lakes state. Milwaukee, that's a nice place. They have this first baseman there who's now hitting. How's he hitting these days? Let's look. Well, terrible this year, but I don't know. The fact remains that the last 2 years he's posted a combined 127 OPS plus. Like,
he's been pretty good. Yeah,
that would be nice. Good. Averaging 30 home runs per 162 games, like exactly the kind of player that has been demanded by the fan base since forever, and we had for a short time with Edwin Encarnacion for 2/3 of a season in Mike Napoli, and it's just, but this is the homegrown type. And so I don't know.
Yeah. No, the subject you're alluding to earlier is, of course, talking about Terry Francona and I guess sort of his hand in where the Indians are now with how much they're struggling and the fact that we keep seeing all these players who are nothing in Cleveland. And then they go somewhere else. They get consistent playing time. They make these small changes. And then all of a sudden they're great. I mean, even Yandy Diaz, he didn't change a whole lot. I think he's still hitting the ball actually lower than he was last year.
Yeah,
but
no, there's nothing different about him.
Right, but other teams are finding something. Like, even if they're saying the same things, it's just the different voice is working better than a mix of Terry Francona and Tyvan Berkley, who may or may not exist. But it's just, I'm not sure where to figure out where Terry Francona's blame lies. I don't think he's great at drawing lineups, but I don't think that's super important. But if it's to the point where he's the one not letting these guys get consistent playing, like you said, Carlos Gonzalez is out there every single day, and he's not good. Why didn't just Greg Allen go out there and try to be good? Like, it doesn't make any sense. He just relies on these veterans so much. Just because, is it because it worked with Austin Jackson once, and now we got to do it every time? I don't quite get it, but it's just hard to find where the blame starts with either the front office not getting the right players or players not playing well enough. But when it's so many players having the same kind of struggles every year, and then Jose Ramirez being so slow to start this year and not really changing anything, I don't know when you start shifting that blame to the coaching staff, even if it's not Francona, even if it's just Van Berkelio. But somebody's clearly not getting through to the players, and it's not that I think they're giving them like bad information or they're stupid or anything, but it's just a matter of like the voice you hear. Like, I'm sure all the teams are mostly giving players the same exact information, but you hear it a different way from somebody else and it sounds completely different and it clicks. And it almost seems like that's what's happening, because now Giovanni Urshela in New York is just drilling the ball everywhere. He has like a sky high BABIP, but it's not for lack of trying, because he has a ton of hard contact. And Jesus Aguilar, like you said, has been a success in Milwaukee, and Yandy Diaz is killing the ball. And I don't know, it's just frustrating to see. And how much would you put on Francona for all this? The mantra has always been that he's a great motivator, but then last year we heard that he couldn't communicate with Yandy Diaz for some reason. Francisco Lindor had to be a mediator to talk to him to get his frustration.
Well, part of that was it a language barrier too, obviously, but yeah.
It didn't sound like that,
because I got the read I got from what I understood it was a language barrier thing. That was one of the reasons that Francisco Lindor was in that meeting with him, was because,
I mean, it was one of them, but wasn't he going to Francona specifically to air his frustrations about not getting playing time? Like, if you're a point where a player who's shown somewhere else that he can hit this well is frustrated with your manager, that's got to be kind of a sign.
I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I don't know how much to heap on Francona. And I don't like to say one thing or another about any hitting coach, just because that's just not how I don't know. I think that the hitting itself is too reactive, and it's the coaching isn't within that level. I don't think it's really all that impactful, if at least in the old school way of doing things. I don't know. But then, of course, you look across the entire lineup, and they have one player who's an above average hitter, and then the other one obviously is Lindor, who's creeping his way up. But honestly, you look at across these guys, and so many of them never expected to be great hitters in the first place. So it's like they were dealt a raw hand. You know what I mean? Like Santana was, he was a great hitting prospect before he came over. Francisco Lindor was, he was a great everything, like from the get go. So it's hard to talk about development and stuff like that there. And then of course you have Jose Ramirez, who was a huge success story. And then outside of that, I don't know. It's just there's like you said, there's something being lost somewhere, and I can't really identify with it. I'd identify where, but the Indians do seem to have a problem with getting the most out of their hitters. Pitching, fine. You know what I mean? They pop out starters like it's nobody's business. You know, like the latest example being Jeffrey Rodriguez. It's weird how that's the one place that they can really dominate in terms of development. And I wonder if that's almost, I don't know. This is a weird thing to say, but is pitchers are so separated from the coaching staff in a way, because in one part because they're over in the goddamn bullpen. I don't know. I don't know how much to heap on Francona, and then how much to just say this sucks and the players that the front office is getting aren't good.
But I think they're better than this, right? I mean, like, if you take pitchers out of it, the Indians...
I don't know, Matt. That's the thing. Look at the lineup. Are they?
I mean, they're right? Better than a combined 73 WRC plus, right? Like, they've got to be at least an average offense.
Again, are they? I mean, obviously Ramirez is having a terrible season. Francisco Lindor is digging his way back from a slow start. But outside of that, Gonzalez is never going to be that good. He hasn't been good in 2 years. Luplo is a nice surprise. Perez is actually out-hitting himself. Santana is doing well. Kipnis hasn't been good in 2 years. Jake Bowers, who knows? The Rays thought so highly of him that they traded him. Lourdes Martin has had 1.5 good years of being good. Tyler Naquin's never been that good of a hitter. I could keep on going. It's just, this is something I said in our Slack channel over the weekend or last week or something like that. Like, there's four guys at the Indian that were on the Indians last year who have WRC plus over 134. And they're not on the Indians anymore. And whether that's money in Michael Brantley's case, whether it's, again, money in Edwin Encarnacion's case, whether it's the Yandy Diaz case, I don't know. But the Yandy Diaz case, I think, is one we have to keep on circling, because that is the latest case in a failure of someone to accurately judge talent.
Yeah, you're right. It's like it's failure somewhere. We don't exactly know who, but somewhere along the line, somebody screwed up. So,
and who do you, I don't know. And who is to judge for that? Because I know that Terry Francona carries a lot of sway in the game and in the organization because of who he is. You know, he's a two-time championship winning coach, all this stuff. You know, he's been around the team for decades because of his dad. He's a nice man. He's an ambassador for the team itself, which is important in its own way. You know, when you have a team like Cleveland, who, you know, I mean, sometimes didn't always have a face. He was the face early on. I just feel like there's a failure somewhere in between the management and the front office, right? To say someone needs to, I don't know, and this is an argument I'm sure we talked about last year, but we've never really readdressed it, I think, because we were kind of hopeful that Jake Bowers would kind of hit the ground running. But the fact that Yandy Diaz is hitting as well as he is, and the fact that the Rays did something that's so blatantly obvious in getting three of the top 26 exit velocity guys that were in the game last year and put them in their offense, and they are logging OPS pluses. I'm sorry, I'm using OPS plus, using WRC, but plus, but we're on different websites. The numbers are close enough anyway. But anyway, 141, 129, and 125 OPS pluses. That would be first, second, and third on the Indians this year. As it is, it's first, third, and fourth on the Rays. I guess you could count Austin Meadows as 207. Jesus Christ, Austin Meadows.
He's injured now, but he was really good. And
good Lord. But yeah, again, that's Yandy Diaz, Tommy Pham, and Avisail Garcia. Garcia, I'm sure, will come back to earth. Pham is good. Diaz is who we know him to be. His batting average has sunk down to .267, but again, the on-base percentage will always be there because he has incredible plate discipline. So I don't know. We'll see. Baseball is a long season.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest glaring issue with the front office is not just giving Michael Brantley at least a qualifying offer. And if he declined it, you get a draft pick. But if he didn't, then you get Michael Brantley for a year. But
I'm saying
a little bit of Captain Hindsight in that, because nobody was quite sure that he'd be this good again, giving him the...
He's having the best year of his career, is the
right
thing.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, I don't think people saw that coming.
Like,
it's easy to say it now, but...
He is hitting better than he did when he was third in MVP voting, I think. Yes, he is, in fact.
Yeah, this is his best year, yeah.
He's already got 10 home runs in 40 games. He's on pace to fucking hit 40 home runs, if you really want to look at it that way.
Yeah, it's good. It's going to feel real good. So there is one other thing we have to talk about, Merritt. The good half of it is Yeffrey Rodriguez, who came over in a trade for the front office that continues to look just stellar, is trading Yan Gomes for Rodriguez and Daniel Johnson, who Johnson, by the way, is also crushing the ball in Double A. I think he had a two-homer game the other day.
Mm-hmm. He's killing him.
And they're brutal. Yeah, man, is great in the majors. And
then, by the way, if that trade works out, then everything I just said about someone fucking up the front office... In the toilet. Throw it right in the old toilet there.
I mean, they still have obvious other screw-ups, but that negates a lot. But
you know what bugs me, too, is there's talk about how forward-thinking they are and how they have to be forward-thinking, because obviously they're dealing with such a shorthand. The fact that they're so lacking in just seemingly a large chunk of the game, and I don't know whether that's a front office or a front office translating it to the field thing or what, but, you know, there's something missing, and we can't figure. Anyway,
right? Maybe Daniel Johnson will be that missing link. We don't know, but for now, I mean, it's Yeffrey Rodriguez is the fifth starter, which is he hasn't looked like a shutdown pitcher yet. He doesn't have like a 10 strikeouts per inning, like one walk or whatever. But he's been pretty average as far as his walks and strikeouts. But he has a 97 mile per hour fastball. On Baseball Savant, he's in the upper. I already forgot. I think it was like 93 percentile something, or was it in the 70s? I don't know. He's in the upper half of spin rate for his fastball. So he's got a really good fastball that he's using.
I think he's 13th. He's 13th highest spin rate in his fastball. I was actually looking at this yesterday for an article I'm working on. He has an incredibly high spin rate in his fastball. Yes.
Which is really cool. And then it generates a lot of ground balls that he gets. There might still be some luck involved with what he's doing, but he looks basically like 2016 Cody Anderson, where he had the really good start with the 2015?
2016, yeah, when he's the low strikeouts with the 3.05 ERA, yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's exactly what Yeffrey Rodriguez looks right now. So maybe if your big sweaty son doesn't turn out to be anything, which he's had a couple bad starts in a row, maybe Yeffrey Rodriguez is the new heir to that throne. I mean, he's not sweaty, but what have you thought of him as the new fifth starter coming over, replacing effectively Clevinger and Kluber, because Cody Anderson hasn't done much of a job of that.
Here's a weird thing that someone should never, no one ever expected me to say. It reminds me a little bit of Miles Mikolas.
Oh, yeah. The Miles Mikolas?
The one and only. No, last year, Mikolas was like third or fourth. He was sixth in Cy Young voting. Struck out 6.5 per 9. I wish I had the percentages, but Baseball Reference is just the way it is. But popped up a 2.83 ERA. With a 3.28 fielding independent pitching. This is the single, I mean, this is basically what I expected Rodriguez to be in a way. Well, not expected to be, this is kind of what I've seen. I mean, he's going to have ebbs and flows because, you know, this because he doesn't get a lot of strikeouts. This year, Mikolas's ERA is up a full run. So is his fielding independent pitching because, as you said, luck has a lot to do with it. Now, what's interesting about what I thought, Rodriguez is doing it. Obviously, he's elevated his ground ball percentage by more than 10 points, almost 11 points now. Almost 12 points, actually. He's dropped his fly ball rate, which is also a positive. He's upped his sinker usage, which is a strange thing to do. And this is really the thesis of the article that I'll be posting later this week, which is a strange thing to do in an era where sinker use is at its absolute lowest ebb ever. And I don't know why. Or what the thought process was here, or whether this is a long-running thing that's going to continue, but it's something very interesting about him, and a neat change of pace from what is essentially an entire lineup of, you know, just high fastball, high velocity type of guys. Also, does he really throw 97 miles an hour? He does. Damn.
Yeah, that's his max. It's like 95, 97.
What's his game on Sunday? It just seems like he was hitting 92, like maybe 93 every now and again. But
it's not frequent, but I mean, he touches 97. Which
he can do it, yeah. But even this is saying that his average velocity is 95 on his fastball. I was like, I was seeing, I don't know, maybe the gun out in Oakland was just slow or something like that.
Gun's cold.
Guns gold, you know, yeah. No, that sinker usage is interesting, and you know the Indians are one of a few teams that can really take advantage of that simply because of what is in their infield. As struggling as Ramirez is at the plate, still a great glove. Lindor is there. As bad as Kipnis is at the plate, he's really become a great defender over the years due to his pre-pitch positioning, I guess. And that part of that is scouting. Part of that is obviously the coaching staff and everything like that. And then obviously, what's his name, is a very good first baseman, Carlos Santana. How long it'll last, that is the excellent question. You're right. That said, his BABIP is like 289 or something like that. We'll see. I like what I'm seeing so far. This is everything the Indians needed, kind of, really. Everything was really threatened to fall apart when you lose two ace-caliber pitchers, when that's all your team has.
So if he's the fifth starter, which...
I know.
Holy cow.
Well, and that's
I guess fourth now, you know? Technically, but I mean, yeah, exactly. He's going to be the fifth at some point.
Yes, exactly. It'll be once Clevenger comes back, he'll be the fifth starter, and then... And after that, what the hell do you do with him, like, in the event Corey Kluber comes back, you know?
I mean, that kind of brings up another question the Indians, whether it's the development or coaching staff, have to answer, is they're not turning these guys into bullpen arms. Because, like, Cody Anderson probably should have just been – he can also hit 97 as a bullpen reliever. Like, why is he not in the bullpen somewhere? He could be probably a better reliever. Even Yeffrey Rodriguez could probably be a better reliever. He gets a lot of ground balls. He throws the ball stupid hard, and I'm sure he can throw it faster as a reliever. So it's weird they're stretching all these guys into starting pitchers. Like, they could have just used – I know Adam Plucko was injured, but they could have used him at some point as a starter, and Zach Plesac is going to be coming soon. So They have a ton of starting pitchers, and they're not turning any of these, like – high velocity, limited pitch guys into relievers, which seems weird to me that we've talked about it before. They're so bad at developing relievers, and they have these guys who could potentially be that reliever, and they're just not doing it. I guess it's helped now since they need more starting pitching, but I don't know when eventually we're going to see them actually start doing it, whether it's when Kluber and Clevenger come back, unless they just send these guys to the minors and be done with it, or if they actually do start to turn them back into solid relievers in time for the postseason.
That's an excellent question. And obviously, it always circles back to the prodigal son, Danny Salazar. Whether he's alive or not is the real question. But at the same time, you know, like that's the secret dream of all of us, right? Is that they get to October and he comes back and he's just a shutdown closer or something like that. And he throws, you know, 10 innings. His arm explodes by the end of it, but they win a World Series and he's a hero forever in Cleveland. He can't lift it, but he never has to buy a drink again. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean he somehow doesn't exist, but he keeps getting injured. It's weird.
It's magic, you know. He's Schrodinger's pitcher.
that's what I was gonna say, but I'm not sure if that's Schrodinger. I guess because he exists and doesn't exist.
Right.
But I was gonna say he doesn't exist, but he gets injured. I don't think that makes it Schrodinger's pitcher.
Whatever. You know what?
No. I don't know. The analogy was close enough.
It sounded good, and then you ruined it by digging into it too much. 253 is BABIP. His on base is left on base rate. Talking about Rodriguez is 80.2. So right. Definitely he's having some luck.
I mean, he's going to regress, but he's still
ground ball pitchers pitcher. Have luck. That's the thing too. You know, like it's just they induce the luck by inducing the ground ball. So whether it's a valuable thing to continue, I don't know. But to your point about the relief pitcher, I mean, where is the value in forcing guys to become relievers? Like how many the old pathway to becoming a great reliever was being a failed starter. Look no further than someone like Andrew Miller, terrible starting pitcher. One of the greatest relief pitchers I've ever seen for a couple of years there. And then you have someone like Aroldis Chapman, who did both, was good at both, but said, no, I want to be a closer, and is good at it. So I don't know if the Indians just would rather have more starting pitchers. They're more valuable, you know what I mean? Like, they can turn them into, you know, great relievers with lots of control instead if they need to, if they have too many of them. But right now, what they do need is more starting pitching, because right now they're very bad everywhere else, so...
I think that's a good point. Like, they could just be keeping them as starters to trade for major league caliber relievers when they need them. So,
well, that's something I've written about a few times. Like, the Indians have massive deficiencies as a team, and they also have, even now, even with two of their five starting pitchers from the beginning of the game, beginning of the season hurt, they're standing on a glut of riches that they could turn into something valuable. And look no further than my aforementioned, you know, Alex Verdugo, or anything, fucking anything, you know, like, shit, you know what Shane Bieber could bring back? God damn.
Yeah, I mean, there was talk last year that the Indians just refused to budge on him as part of a Bryce Harper deal, which seems crazy, but I mean, it would have made sense not to do it, because you get a half season of Bryce, you can't guarantee anything, or you get several seasons of a really good pitcher in Shane Bieber. So,
Miles Mikolas' nickname is Lizard King. Of course, so that's something.
And I guess the other thing is that they have James Karinchak coming up soon, who hasn't allowed an earned run since last August. Right. He just went on the 7-day DL or IL. He went to Illinois for 7 days. But when he comes back, I mean, if he comes to the Indians bullpen and is anywhere close to as good as he's been in the minors, they already have, I think right now they have a pretty good bullpen. If you add him and fire Neil Ramirez into the sun, you've got maybe one of the best relieving corps in the majors. It's got to be close, right?
And that's the thing, too. I was watching the game on Sunday, and when he's on, obviously, he's great in Adam Simber. But Nick Wittgren does not have anything particularly eye-popping going on. But he's effective, and he's getting strikeouts, and he's fooling guys because he's locating and doing well at that. And Brad Hand is having a great year. I mean, that's three guys. I mean, Simber is going to be up and down, I think, because of the velocity thing is an issue. Wittgren doesn't really blow the doors off velocity wise, but he has, you know, it's a collection of solid things that makes everything else better. And then whatever, you know, I like Oliver Perez. Seems like a nice enough guy.
He has that weird thing where he's not throwing ground balls anymore, but it still works. Like, he has a ton of fly balls he's throwing, but somehow.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Indians as a group, they have a 3.15 ERA, their relievers, which is second best in the AL, which is incredible.
That is shocking, considering how bad some of these guys are.
I mean, considering Neil Ramirez exists. But
yeah,
it's interesting that the Indians, their strikeout rate is 8.56 per nine for their relievers. And looking, like, ordering it by ERA, the next lowest is the Rockies at 17 with an 8.06 strikeout rate. So they don't have like a lot of big strikeout relievers. They also don't have a bunch of ground ball relievers. So it's kind of weird that they're doing so good.
Well, that right there is just telling us that it's a house of cards, quite honestly. Like, it's,
well, I mean, they're also not walking a ton either. So, I mean, they just have a weird construction, I guess. And they're leaving a ton on base. So
you're right. It's just, but again, outside of Simber and Wittgren, and then a handful of, you know, loogies basically. Which they do need, because Simber is so bad at getting out lefties right now. Still, it's I don't know. It's close to being good, but you know, that's just the way bullpens are. We've talked about this many times, how bullpens are an evolution throughout the year. Unless you basically do what the Yankees did, you know, and just get all of them, get all the good relievers. I mean, their relief corps is fucking absurd. It's truly absurd. The fact that Zach Britton's their third or fourth best reliever is just crazy to me. Chad Green.
Do you want to guess which reliever corps has the highest left on base percentage merit? You want to take a guess at that?
Is it the Indians?
It's the Indians. 80.4%. Okay. So yeah, there's a lot of luck involved. But their BABIP isn't super. I don't. They're such a weird group. I think most of this is Neil Ramirez dragging him down. He's so bad.
So bad. I mean, I'm on the get rid of Dan Otero train, but whatever, you know. He did do that very nice cameo for me. So, you know what? I like Dan Otero. Never mind. He's my guy.
Dan Otero's good this year, actually. Holy cow.
That's true. Yeah, he was just bad last year. Maybe sad last year. So he's back being good.
All right, Merritt. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Matt Leininger, Columbus Clippers, director of social media, all that stuff. I've said it several times. You know what he is. He's a great guy. We're going to talk about Oscar Mercado coming up and all kinds of other fun stuff with him. So stick around.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
And welcome back to Let's Talk Tribe. We're joined now by Matt Leininger, Columbus Clippers, director of social media, website, communications, public addresser, announcer, breaker of change, just about everything for the Clippers. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
It's kind of the perfect night to have you on. I know we were going to do it last week, then I had to move it back, but it kind of works out perfectly because tonight we got the news that Oscar Mercado is going to be joining the Indians soon. So I wanted to start with that. Just in general, is there anything you've seen from this young, really fast outfielder that the Indians can be excited about?
First and foremost, let me just say that he's one of the nicest guys that I've had the privilege of meeting so far. So he's going to be a joy for Cleveland to have. He is as much of a five-tool player as I've seen. He's just complete. He's a complete outfielder. His arm isn't spectacular, but it is above average in my viewing. And, you know, on the base pass, he sprays the ball around the field at the plate, and on the base pass, he's deadly. So he's going to be something in the upcoming years, and I hope that he hits the ground running up in Cleveland.
Who would you compare him? I mean, of the guys you've seen so far, not to say he's going to be this, that, or the other thing, but who have you seen, just in all, whether for the Clippers or, you know, for someone the Clippers have been playing that kind of he reminds you of, or someone in the majors for that matter? I don't know.
That's a that's a fantastic question. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head that is really like that. If you really want to get Indians fans excited, I would almost go a Kenny Lofton style. But those are very big shoes to fill. So I wouldn't put that kind of pressure on the kid. But he has that style. You know, he's able to hit lasers all over the field and can also drop down a bunt. It's random power out of nowhere too. So he's a lot of fun to watch. I hope that Tribe fans enjoy him. I also hope they're patient with him. Yeah, remember, this kid's first time up, so. Hopefully he can make a splash and be fun for years to come.
So as far as, I mean, I'm sure fans, we'd hope they'd be patient, but as far as the Indians themselves being patient, do you have a sense that they might or that they should, because this is a player who's maybe different than others that they brought up and sent immediately back down? I know right now he's just replacing Tyler Naquin on the injured list. So do you get any kind of sense that maybe this is a chance for him to start every day in the Indians? And if he is, do you think he can handle that already? I mean, there's just so many reasons to be excited for him. Do you think the Indians will be patient with him and give him the chance to blossom into the player that he probably can be?
Well, I really think that that's the reason that it has taken, in my personal opinion, obviously. I'm not up there. I'm not in the front office, so I don't know. I don't know the way of thinking. But I believe that they wanted him to play every day, and I think that's what has really, you know, there's been that delay of not bringing him up, just because you don't want a guy that's going to platoon when he gets up there. I was really hoping that we would have Greg Allen in AAA all of last year, but obviously injuries made it so that he was needed up at the big league level. But when you get a guy up there in AAA, I'd like to see him develop for a while. I'd like to get him the bats that he needs every single day, bats every day. And I had assumed that that was kind of the route that they were going with Oscar. Now, you know, with Tyler going, with Nick going on the DL, that could change everything, and only time will tell. If he goes up there and is all of a sudden putting up nasty slash lines, then we won't see him back in Columbus. You know, it's really all about, you know, how he performs and what happens when everybody gets healthy.
A big talk with him was that he in spring training, he improved his swing and it was different and it was helping him go from maybe just a guy who can be an average hitter to above average. Have you seen any of that this year, even outside of just the stats? Like, is he driving the ball harder? Have you seen anything different with how he's hitting the ball that's led to this big change in his swing that apparently Indians are so excited about?
I will be completely honest. We didn't get that much of him last year, so I don't have a whole lot to go off of as far as how much things have changed from last year to this year. But the confidence level is definitely noticeable. You know, he just feels looser, looks like looser up at the plate. And I would have to think that that has to do with how well he's connecting with the ball. And If that happened during the off season and in spring training, then he put in proper work and definitely is deserving of the shot.
This is more something in general, just with the Clippers, but obviously it circles around Mercado simply because, you know, he's going to the big club right now, and obviously there's a pipeline between the two places. But how much interaction or involvement do the Indians have directly with? That you've seen, at least from your angle, with the Clippers, whether operationally, whether I know that minor league teams kind of exist in a pseudo independent of the big club, except for the players. I worked for a AA club myself for a while, but how how involved are the Indians in the day to day, like, work with the players, or do you see any of that at all? That's something I've always kind of wondered, with showing a player a pathway to the majors, sort of thing. Do you ever notice anything? Have you ever noticed anything like that with the Indians from Cleveland sending information down to Columbus at all, or no?
Well, that one's a little above my pay grade.
I figured. But, you're here, so I got to ask you.
No, that is totally fine. Totally fine. I don't get the opportunity to really know how much is being talked with, but I guarantee Tony Mancelino, our manager, is on the horn almost every single day, you know, up at the big club. You know, that's they lay out their plans and everything, and that's how it goes. But the only time that I really see is when, you know, the occasional trips that Antonetti and the guys will come down just to, you know, for any real reason, whether they're scouting a guy, whether they're just coming down because they have an off day. You know, it's that's about all I really get to see from the Tribe perspective, mm-hmm. of them being involved. But with the day to day stuff, I'm not privileged to that information. I'm sure that information's out there, but no, that's a little above my pay grade.
How close do you follow the players that you could almost consider, like, quote unquote, your players ever in Columbus? I know, like, you post a lot about Yandy Diaz when he hits big hits because everybody was excited about him. We got to watch him. I know a lot about current Indians players you follow and keep tabs on them. So is there a lot of players that you see come through and you've interacted with them so much that you just want to keep tabs on them going forward? And, like, how much and usually how long do you follow those guys because you got that connection with them in Columbus?
Well, I'll tell you a quick story. So I have a little girl that is special needs that her mom reached out to us about 4 years ago about a guy, Tyler Holt, was really instrumental in helping my little friend Brianna really come out of her shell. And because of that, there's certain players that just hold a special place in my heart that have been very good to Brianna. Guys like Mike Clevenger, Sean Armstrong, Giovanni Urshela are all some of her favorites, Ronnie Rodriguez. And when you get to interact with a lot of these guys, you really, there's a little bit of a connection there, whether it's a two-way connection or not, you don't really know. But the guys that have treated Brianna the best, I will remember forever. And it's when I see, you know, guys that leave the organization and go on to do very well, or even if they don't do very well, it's still nice to keep in touch. You see guys like, you know, James Ramsey, an outfielder we had a few years back, he's coaching at Georgia Tech now. Tyler Holt's coaching at Florida State. It's neat to see what happens when these guys are no longer in the organization. It's nice to follow up with, and you wish nothing but the best. You see, you know, Jesus Aguilar, these very solid ball players that are also great people. And if they're not getting an opportunity with Cleveland, you hate to see them go, but you wish them nothing but the best, because you know that when they have good hearts and guys that have great heads on their shoulders and guys that just don't quite have an opportunity to play with Cleveland. You know, like an Eric Gonzalez, that guy could start for probably 20 teams at shortstop in the big leagues, but he's behind franchise player in Francisco Lindor. You know, that sucks. So, of course, I'd like to see Eric go someplace else where he can get an everyday shot like he did. And when guys come and go like that, you wish them nothing but the best. That's the business. It's a hard part of the business, but that's the business.
Who, I mean, you kind of got into it. Who would you say in your time with the Clippers has been your kind of your favorite guy to work with? Who's been, whether he's easy to work with, whether he's interesting, whether he was just a great player to watch? I don't know. I mean,
it's hands down, it's Clev.
Really?
You know, my Clevenger. Oh yeah, he just brought this different, I don't know, it was just a different feeling. He has an enigma about him that is just fascinating. And he's also super good to my Brianna, and he's just fun to be around. So I'm a big Clev fan for life.
Now, Matt, one of the things you told me, it was a while ago at this point, it's one of my favorite like minor league stories I've heard so far, but it was about how the Clippers broadcast now, it's really good. Like, it looks, if you did tell me they were a minor league team, it would just look like a major league broadcast. And you told me about how that happened before. I just wanted to hear more about that and how you guys ended up, I think it was something about being on a sports center and then...
yeah, so... yeah, when you think of the minor league broadcasts, and now most of them are, at least AAA wise, have boosted up to HD broadcast capabilities. Well, we had the privilege of a young man named Todd Cloyd throw a no-hitter for us. And when he did, you know, we set the highlights to ESPN, and we got on top 10. We were on the top 10 on ESPN, but the SportsCenter anchors were ripping us out about, it's like, when is this being broadcast? 1986? And it really kind of lit the fire under our production team to really push forward and move into HD. And I'm not sure if it was the next year or the year after, but we finally boosted up and joined the big boys in the high definition ranks. But it only took a little razzing from SportsCenter to really bump us up.
Are you just hoping somebody else has another no hitter so you can send them more highlights with the your big fancy new broadcast?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we've made it a couple other bringing up Tyler Holt again, the catch that he had in the Governor's Cup playoffs back in 2015. That was a SportsCenter highlight, and we got a lot of love for that because our center field camera caught it perfectly. And it's one of the coolest clips, one of the coolest things that I've ever seen. We had almost 12,000 people in the stands that night because we gave away free tickets for playoff games, just trying to pack the park. And it was an amazing, awesome moment. And actually, now that I think about it, that was Clev's debut that night. It was at Huntington Park. It was I'm sorry, I'm incorrect. That was Clev's. It was his second start. It was the second start for us, but he was lights out in that too. But his first start, he went 7 2/3 no hit innings, and that was one of the coolest things that I ever had the privilege of announcing for.
So, do you have a favorite specifically? I mean, was it that, or did you have something else favorite to announce for the Clippers?
Oh boy, I'd say that was one of the coolest things was that 2015 Governor's Cup run. We had, and it's this way across all of minor league baseball. It's just something about baseball in September that fans just don't really come out for. And attendance is down everywhere when it comes to playoffs. And so we had the first game at home for the playoffs, and it was terrible attendance, only a couple thousand. And so our president and general manager, Ken Schnock, he came up with the idea, let's just give away tickets. Let's just do what we can to try to get people in and hope, you know, we can recruit money back with, you know, food and beverage sales and merch and stuff. And boy, they came out in droves. We had 10,000 and 11,000. And it was just, it was September playoff, meaningful baseball in AAA. And it was one of the coolest, like a week long. And I think we had either four or five games where it was just, I mean, packed. And the crowd was rocking, and we were winning, and it was so much fun. So I definitely have to say my favorite, if there isn't a specific moment, it would be the 2015 run, because that was a lot of fun.
Who would you say, of the players you worked with, who would you say just you've seen the magic in them that makes them maybe a future you, a future broadcaster type, a future, you know, man of the people, a face of a broadcast sort of a thing?
I think Brandon Barnes would be amazing on television. I think he would be so good on television, almost an Eric Burns type. He's just got this outgoing, bursting personality that is fun to be around, and I think he would be amazing. Now, if you want to go outside of the broadcasting ranks and go coaching wise, and the only reason I think of this is Guillermo Quiros is a guy that we had 3 years ago, I believe, 4 years ago, is a catcher. And he's now coaching in the White Sox organization. He was just here when Charlotte was in town last week. And running into him kind of actually had me thinking last week about who of our guys right now that would be a fantastic coach. And I think Eric Haas has this baseball mind that it's soft but powerful, if that makes sense. Like he's a general on the field, but he's not an overly loud guy or anything, but I would listen to that guy talk about baseball all day.
All right, that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks again, Matt, for joining us.
Thanks a lot, yeah.
You can find Matt's work with the Clippers at clippersbaseball.com, on Twitter and Instagram at CLBClippers. And, of course, thanks for listening to the podcast this week. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us a review, a comment. It all helps so much. Just let us know. Let us know. Let your friends know that you listen to the podcast. Let us know you're listening if you made it all this way to the end credits. That's fun. Just go ahead. Let us know in the comments somewhere that you listened. You're not going to get anything for it, but undying appreciation. So we'll talk to you next week.